Hi, it's Helen Hebert with Paper Talk. It's February 6th, 2017, and I'm at the Codex Book Fair in Richmond, California, at Mary Huebner's booth. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you
doing? Good to see you.
You too. So, tell me a little bit about how you got interested in paper.
I was a graduate student at UC Santa Barbara, and I was working with a collage artist named William Dole. And I started working with watercolor on paper solely. Mm-hmm. And I found my watercolors boring, and I started tearing out the bits that I liked.
Uh-huh.
And then I started piecing those together into collages. And so I've been working with paper as a collage material and as a painting surface for about 10 years before being introduced to Suki Hughes.
Uh-huh.
In the driveway of Harry and Sandra Reese's house, where she was giving a demonstration of Japanese paper making. And I learned from her how to make the Japanese style and dry it with brushes on planks.
Right.
And I just fell in love with the whole process. And I had such a small amount of paper that I was precious about it. I didn't want to use it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to make more paper. And using it to incorporate with other commercial papers that I had bought in my collages.
You were making Japanese style?
Japanese style.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And it wasn't until 1980, when I met Suki, it wasn't until maybe 1988 that I started thinking about working again with a book form. Since high school, I had been making one-of-a-kind books, combining poetry with imagery, poetic phrases from different poets.
Yeah.
And on the weekends when I was in high school, I studied at Immaculate Heart. I helped Sister Carita pull serigraph prints and such.
Oh.
And so that was my first introduction, I believe, to the idea of combining words with imagery in a nicely designed way.
Uh-huh.
And then in 1994, I was complaining to my husband about that I've exhibited for so long and I've done all this thing and I don't have a single catalog. And he glibly looked at me and said, "Well, then make one." This was before I owned a computer, and so I cut and paste out this catalog that I called Old Marks, New Marks, because my work at that time was deeply influenced by Upper Paleolithic cave painting and early goddess figures and things like that. And so I did print an offset book, and then Sandra Reese walked me and a couple of friends through the the process of making a clamshell box. And in each book with the offset book, I made a little handmade paper collage based upon an abstract collage based upon images and shapes and curves of Upper Paleolithic, like the Venus of Willendorf, those large, beautiful, sensual figures.
Uh-huh.
And then right after that, I travel a lot. My husband's a photographer, and we would often do assignments where I would either be his assistant or I would write the story and he would photograph it. And this was for Condé Nast Traveler or National Geographic Traveler.
Right. I saw some of those on your website, yeah.
And so I would keep journals, and then when I got back to my studio, my way back into my studio was to look at my journals, write things out. And so I had text and I had images, and I thought the logical thing is to make a book. And so my first handmade paper book was with overbeaten abaca paper that Rie Hachinagi and Gail Berkus and I made at UCSB. And it was sort of the impetus for UCSB to get a papermaking facility. Yeah,
okay. I didn't realize Rie was there.
She was there
now
as a student.
On the East Coast.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So she was terrific. They all were. And then Inga Brueggemann printed the text, and they were my prose poems about Iceland. And I wanted the paper to be overbeaten abaca because I wanted it to look like the old manuscripts, you know, the sagas that came from the Icelandic world. And then the second book I made had to do with the caves of Lascaux, where I was invited by the Minister of Culture to go to the real cave.
Oh, wow.
Which was a religious experience.
Yeah, for sure.
And I made a series of paintings about the plan view map of the caves using the ochre pigment that was prevalent in there. And after I looked at those in the studio, an idea for a book came. All of my books come out of a series of paintings.
So did you make the paper for that book?
Yes, I did. I made a prototype at UCSB, at the very primitive setup that they had, and that was in '97. And pigmented the paper with ochre, made it very, very air thin, and handwritten on this paper. And that Christina Wasserman exhibited in that and my Iceland book in an exhibit called Artists Who Travel. And so after I made that, I knew I needed to edition it, and I went to Dieudonné. And that's where I met so many. Nino was there, and Paul.
Pat Almond.
I read
your website. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. No, they're such great people. And yeah. And so I made paper. In fact, the Lascaux paper was so thin, I'm glad I colored it, because you could barely see it on the film.
Right.
And it's Kozo and... And so I made the paper for that. And since then, every time I've wanted to edition a book, I mean, I can do it at my house, but why not go to New York?
Right.
And so in some way, the practical part of my how am I going to afford to do all this kicks in, and I realize how many sheets of paper for this project can I make in 3 days, because that's all I can afford to do. And my editions are usually limited to 20 copies.
Right.
The Lascaux book was only 10 copies, and each one contained original paintings, 6 original paintings.
Oh, wow.
And based on images from the cave, and based on my text, which was about my impressions of being in the cave.
Right. Cool. Okay, and let's talk a little bit about your most recent project, which you have here.
Okay.
You probably have all of your books here, but watermarking is true to my heart.
Oh,
and
good.
And that's what you have. And I love how you have these watercolors integrated with the watermark. So
great.
Tell me about this.
Well, this is my fourth book using watermarks, but it's the most extensive. I want to use the watermark not as something hidden or an identifier, but as a drawing tool.
Mm-hmm.
And my first watermarks were with the hammer, and I made the H-A-M-L-E-T, and that was my last page. And then the next one was Silent Faces Angkor.
Mm-hmm.
And that I did whole 22 by 30 sheets of this water flowing, and another small edition book, and then the last one was Intimacy. And Intimacy is taking my drawings that I had done of Roman sculpture for the last 3 years going to Rome, and distilling them into line drawings. And from the line drawings, I made laser cut vinyl
watermarks.
And in Fabriano, which is where I went for the residency during the IAPMA conference, and I won the auction for the residency. And so I went and thought, well, that's where watermarks were developed in the 13th century. I should do some serious watermark work. And that's what the idea for the book coalesced, that I needed to do this series of watermarks based upon my sketches from Roman antiquity. And it's called Intimacy because the process of making a watermark and the softness of it and how it's illuminated and how it's kind of a memory of the watermark. It's really not the drawing itself, it's the memory of it. It was just to me, a quiet and intimate thing. And then also, Luigi the papermaker, when I had my American anxious, I've got to get this done, you know, he looked at me and he said, you must take time to dream about the paper. He said that in Italian, and we kind of got it. And I actually had a dream about the word intimacy. And so with the spare vinyl I have brought with me, I wrote in cursive the word and then cut it out with an X-Acto knife. And after the second try, I got one that seemed to work.
Yeah.
And so that became the title page for the book.
Wonderful.
And inside, after the title page and the epigraph with his Luigi Michela's saying, in both Italian and in English, comes an introductory page talking about the watermark process, and it has a crouching Venus on the side, and that introduces you to a suite of 9 drawings, watermark drawings, and there's letterpress in Italian taken from my text, which is in English and Italian in these 2 little books. I work in layers. So the first layer is the cover of the book, which is anodized aluminum and marble.
Fabricated
in Santa Barbara at Neil Fay Company. I worked with I designed it and then worked with the fabricators because I had worked in anodized aluminum before on another project. And I wanted marble and anodized aluminum because they're both cold, hard substances, and I knew you could turn them into very sensual substances.
Yeah,
and this is a very sensual book. And inside, I designed a plexiglass viewing easel, which I'm very proud of. So again, cold, industrial, hard, but it's a conduit for light. It's a means to see the drawing with light. And so the first layer is the lid, which you take off. The book does weigh 6.5 pounds. And then inside there are 2 little books, Marmo and Schizzi, that are, I made the Marmo book about marble, the story of marble and how it's a living substance and how it goes through these metamorphoses just like we do and the relationship between the two. And so, I'm fine.
Should we stop?
No, I'm fine. And I apologize.
No, it's okay. I think I can accept that.
The Schizzi are my sketches that I made directly from sculpture and from photographing sculpture in Rome over the past couple of years. And I printed them on a Japanese handmade paper, shirogoshi paper, and they're digital prints, but they have a real, they conveyed the image really beautifully, and I did an edition of 20, and both of those are paper over board with a cloth spine that I made in my studio in Santa Barbara, and I work with John Balkwell of the Lumino Press, who's the letterpress printer, and he binds a lot of my books as well. In this case, I did the binding on the little books, and he did all the letterpress. And it's printed in centaur and Latin uncial, which is a very ancient text typeface that has the canonical word for the Roman sculpture that I'm doing, like the crouching Venus, or the bathing Venus, or the modest Venus, you know, that. And I knew that if the book was called Intimacy, I would have to have male sculptures and female sculptures. And so what I did was combine 2 needs. One is to have both male and female, and the other was to have a contrasting the light color and a dark color so that you could see the watermark through and get some inkling. And so I went to Giudane to make the ultramarine blue paper, and I chose ultramarine blue because at some point lapis lazuli was more expensive than gold, more valued than gold. It was used for in paintings of the Madonna's cape and, you know, all the very rare.
Now, I have a question.
Yeah.
Why you went to Giudane? Why you used Giudane and Fabriano? Was it because of the how the time, or did you think of it later?
I thought of it deliberately as a way of an artist collaborating with a traditional papermaking house and a contemporary papermaking house. And I wanted to, through this project, put those two together. And it seemed a natural, you know, to go where I knew. And I worked with Paul Wong and Lisa Swartowski. And the paper wasn't getting blue enough. We finally, I think I bought all the ultramarine paper, blue pigment, Talus.
And in New York.
In New York. And we finally, you know, couldn't hold anymore, it's this gorgeous ultramarine blue. And so that became kind of a signature for the book. And to back up also, when I was working on the ivory-colored paper in Fabriano, when Luigi saw my first watermarks, he couldn't figure out what they were. You know, who is this crazy American? It looked like a little map or a tree branch or something. It was a detail of the Crouching Venus. And
God damn it.
We're not spending enough time with each other. He doesn't speak English. I don't. I speak a little bit of Italian. The best way to communicate is with painting. So I turned the paper over, and I tinted very lightly the figure. And then he went, there it is. And then I realized that added another way of understanding a drawing. You know, it could be drawn with light, but then it can also be tinted. And it also alludes to the fact that the ancient Greeks, it said, tinted their marble. I don't believe it was that garish kind of bright plaster color that they had. But maybe I'm wrong, but I will stay with my belief that it's not that. Anybody that can make a sculpture that sensual and gorgeous.
Hey, we're doing a podcast recording. I'll talk to you in a minute.
That's okay. So it was to allude to the tinting of the marble.
Yeah.
As well as a way of showing what it was. And then on the front, I took my text about marble is in English and in Italian. Translated by Lisa Apatow. And it speaks to, I'll just read two things. Marble polishes to such a light penetrating translucency, it seems more celestial than earthly, yet it can emulate the softest flesh and the supplest form. Time is an ancient sea teeming with lush life. Luminous diatoms, coral and plankton evaporate, leaving layers of detritus that calcify into limestone. Deep within the Earth's crust, limestone's calcite melts under the extremes of heat and pressure. Marble is born from the sediments of ancient creatures, an exquisite metamorphosis. Its memory lives in our bones. It bears witness to still another kind of metamorphosis, the shared chemistry that connects human and earthen forms. Likenesses carved in marble explore the wilderness of a single face, the mounds and crevices of the changing body, artifice opening up to light and sensation. This is the livingness of an ancient object. Human form becomes topography of poignant beauty. In a delicate dance, animate and inanimate commingle, a turbulent tenderness ignites an enduring intimacy. The embodied terrain reiterates the bond between us and the living skin of the earth, whose puzzled together crust is just a few miles deep, a dross afloat upon the surface of the spinning, molten planet we call home.
Beautiful.
So that's in English and Italian, and the Italian I extracted phrases to be printed letterpress
on the pages. And so you showed, I saw the male and the female, you have watercolor on the back of the female, and
graphite on the male, because this is deep ultramarine blue, and that chalky pewter graphite just seemed like a perfect match. And then I sprayed the hell out of it so it wouldn't leak over.
Right. And you can't see it from one side to the other.
No, it's a surprise.
Very beautiful.
Thanks.
Do you happen to know how they prepared the pulp for the watermarks in Fabriano?
Fabriano is a cotton pulp. They pigmented it with a little bit of a yellow. And they used a Hollander.
Did they beat it up longer than normal?
they beat it. They use linters in this place.
Yeah.
And they beat it for, I didn't ask how many hours, but it was ready in the morning after doing it the night before.
Okay.
I don't think it was, and they had this drying machine that's unbelievable. You know, you put the sheets in, it goes through this gizmo and comes out bone dry in like 30 seconds.
Oh my goodness.
You know, and at Giudonné, where it got clothespins and fans and everything. So it was a completely different experience to work with production paper makers versus hand paper makers.
Right.
And the production one, the papers got a lot of sizing in it.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't discover that until I realized I wanted to show Luigi, you know, by painting, and the watercolor wouldn't go on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, crap, what am I, you know, what's going on here? And instead of resisting it, I finally just went with it and realized if I just tinted the edges, it worked beautifully.
Uh-huh.
So the paper told me what I had to do.
Nice.
And, you know, conversely, the relatively unsized Giudonné paper, if I painted on it, would just get all crinkled and such.
Right.
A graphite was perfect.
Oh, wonderful.
And the Giudonné paper was cotton with a little bit of abaca in it and a ton of ultramarine paper.
Right.
So,
okay. Wow. Do you have any other projects in the works?
Right now I'm continuing on working. I was accepted in the Visiting Artists and Scholars program at the American Academy in Rome. And I just finished 5.5 weeks there at a marvelous studio and was doing a lot of drawings.
Uh-huh.
And I had some air-dried abaca paper that's very translucent and gorgeous, and I took it with me on the just for, you know, maybe I'll use this. It's been like 5 years and I haven't used it. And I wound up drawing with graphite on this paper, these light leaves, and there was a heater in my studio that didn't work very well, but it blew air, and these things just blew in the air. And so I'm designing an installation right now in which that has to go with a Richard Wilbur poem about laundry. I mean, it's about ephemerality.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm working on that right now.
Okay.
And also on some patinas of bronzes and how I can work with the surfaces of bronze patinas to make a series of work. And maybe, you never know, from that series of work, a book will come. Never know.
Yeah.
I never know.
That's great. Okay, well, it's been a real pleasure, Mary.
It's been lovely to talk to you.
And we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.